And now
it's 10 a.m.
Let's just get down to it.
And it's time for your sports fix.
Strap yourselves in, folks.
From two guys who have covered the teams you're passionate about for years.
We are professionals.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Labor Day weekend, I was 17. I bought a Coke and some gasoline, and I drove out to the county fair.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson, thank you for making us a part of your Wednesday. What's going on over there, Ben?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm hoping you're wearing jeans today. Oh, no, you're not.
You would have to wear all denim.
You would have gone the full Canadian tuxedo.
No, not today. I can. I have the ability.
I don't know if I have a denim shirt anymore. I love jeans, but I don't know if I have a denim shirt anymore. Certainly not one that I wear. I don't know.
Don't go a lot of blue on blue.
Why not?
I'm not 9 years old. My mom's not dressing me anymore. I don't know. I'm not posing for a weird family portrait where we're all dressed in full denim head to toe.
That's funny. That would be funny. All right, man. What's going on? You good?
Yeah, things are good. Life's good. Hey, how much of Will Hardy's pregame did you guys play last night? Did you do the whole technical foul stuff or no?
No.
Okay.
We didn't make it there. Why?
Oh, he was funny. We asked him about how many Andy Larson before the game was reading out of the, you know, there's a big booklet they print out before every game that just kind of has season highs, season lows, some of the season stats. How well has a team challenged calls? How many technical fouls does everybody have, including the coach? And we were all guessing how many technical fouls we think Will Hardy had this season. What's your thought?
He's had more than one, certainly.
Yep.
But it hasn't been a lot.
It's not a ton.
No, I mean, like, and honestly, players don't even rack up that many technical fouls. Like,
with the Jazz. And that was actually a part of the big conversation.
Well, like, there's one player in the league that makes it to the teens, and that's Draymond Green.
Luke usually gets there too, but you're right.
Four.
Eight.
Wow, more than I would have thought.
And then we all argued, at least I know I did, that he should have more. And then we started discussing why he doesn't have more, and then we asked him why he doesn't have more, and if he feels like he gets more leeway or less leeway. Wait, why, with the referees.
What's the rationale why he should have?
Oh, he's
had
always
more
on the refs, all game long. I know we don't see it on TV.
But you've seen Doc Rivers. I mean, he's not
no
alone.
I mean, Will is always on the refs, constantly. Now, he also explained kind of an interesting thing. He said, imagine you have 100 units of getting on the refs. Like, you have 100 opportunities to do it as a team throughout the season. With the Warriors, with the Mavericks, Draymond is going to eat up 60 to 70 of those units of getting on the refs, right? And he's going to draw 15 techs, etc. And then Klay Thompson might take 10. And then maybe Steve Kerr takes the remaining 15, whatever. And that's not techs. I just mean like the ability to really get on the refs and try and get your point across. The Jazz don't have a single player who's going to take up five. So Will Hardy has to do more of that work with the referees than the players will, because Lowry doesn't talk to anybody. Their second most notable player maybe at the moment is a rookie in Keontae George. If you want to say it's Colin Sexton, Colin's a little bit on the refs. Maybe he takes five units. John Collins never talks to the refs. Like, the Jazz don't have players doing that legwork, so Will Hardy has to do it. And in fact, it seems like the officials are aware of that and may give him some added leeway. And then I said, I think he looks intimidating because he's kind of tall. He's got a deep voice, and he kind of always has a furrowed brow. So I always, what I see looks technical foul worthy, but he insists that he uses very kind language. He's not insulting, and he knows the words you can't say that you'll get a technical foul, and he doesn't use them.
I find that interesting. Can I tell you, though, that my initial reaction is this whole conversation really aggravates me?
Okay.
Like, why not just hire referees with a spine?
You have to politic. Unfortunately, I'm with you, but you have to
politic.
That's
what I'm saying.
I'm sure.
That's
yeah.
what I'm saying. This whole thing. And then, you know what makes it even more maddening is it trickles down to where you see some high school coach losing his mind at some you know, part-time guy who's just trying to put it, you know. And I don't want to defend bad refereeing at the high school level. I'm sure it's got to be better. But I don't this whole concept where you have to politic with the referees is so annoying. But here, I'll back you up. I'll tell you why it's necessary. Because they're terrible. For example, to go to a game last night, Ben, and I don't mean to hijack your conversation. We certainly can get back to, you know, Will Hardy's responsibilities ultimately with this team and this year, and whether it's been a success from his end or not, or a failure, I think is a fascinating one. But since when, or why, I guess now, can you use your off arm as a weapon as long as you're trying to dunk it?
Okay, yeah.
Because
Baron Davis, notoriously on Andre Kirilenko, but yeah.
Because
we'll see a lot.
Last time I checked, that should be a foul. And we can get to the example that we saw last night where he wasn't even going to come close to dunking it. But somehow it was like, oh, let him play. No harm, no foul. Meanwhile, Walker Kessler has a broken freaking nose.
Yep, he does. I didn't see the replay, so that makes sense. That's how it happened. I only saw his face covered in blood as he walked off the floor.
But the truth is, and this is why I never thought I would say this ever in my career, but I really appreciate Austin Rivers because he really spoke some truth about refereeing, that they're just fans too, and they want to see Anthony Edwards dunk it. And so they'll let him get away with anything, including sticking an entire finger right through John Collins' face if it means that they can see a spectacular play. And that just wraps up refereeing in a nutshell, because they're absolute bozos that aren't there to do their job, but they're there to watch basketball. They're like, oh, I get a front row seat to this thing. Are you kidding? Did you see how high Anthony Edwards jumped? Oh, yeah, what about the finger through John Collins' face? Oh, that doesn't matter. Because, you know, he was jumping so high. Evan Mobley last night absolutely clocked Walker Kessler in the face with a vicious elbow. Vicious. Can you find the I'm curious. Can you find the replay on there? Because as usual, when they cut to break and they're queuing up the replay in the studio, we saw the replay like 15 times. I mean, you should, Ben, just absolutely right in the nose. Elbow.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Just
clocks him.
He goes
up and then brings the left arm down. Brings the right arm down because he's going up with his left. Brings the right arm down. Yeah, absolutely. Cold clocks.
Breaks his nose.
Walker Kessler in the face.
But he was trying to dunk it, so let him play.
Yeah.
Let him play. But, of course, people that are just excited to watch Anthony Edwards jump are not going to be, have a spine when it comes to calling fouls on superstar players or not being swayed by coaches or being sad because I got yelled at by somebody, so that's going to affect my next call. I shouldn't be surprised that is something that has to be managed in the NBA. But it is frustrating to me because Walker Kessler should have some sort of justice for catching an elbow from one of the biggest humans on the planet. Let him play. No harm, no foul. Hey, I'm thinking to myself, like, don't they usually review any sort of, like, if you ruffle somebody's hair and they're like, well, that was close to the head. We got to review it.
They only do that with the offensive player, which is weird. If you hit the offensive player in the head, they review it.
Oh, heaven help you. You'll probably be suspended
for
5 games.
But the defensive player is fair game. You can hit that guy with the sledgehammer. And, yeah, apparently it's no foul.
John Collins catches a finger to the brain and gets called for a foul. Think about that, Ben. He got called for a foul, and the contact was his eyeball and Anthony Edwards' now dislocated finger. Foul on Collins. I can't see. My eyeball is on the floor. What? Did I hear you right? Call was on me and everybody. And then I love it that the conversation the entire next day is, oh, how would you like to be John Collins today? Anthony Edwards caught a body. Whoa, John Collins. Wait, you mean the guy that just scooped his eyeball off the floor? That guy?
I will tell you, I'm more pro highlight than I am calling the offensive foul in that situation.
I know. Trust me, I know. Well, they should have called the foul last night on Walker Kessler. How dare your nose get in the way of his elbow?
Right. The offensive player has a right to space.
Space does not mean that you get to
no, that was a foul
use,
on
your,
the,
use your elbow as
that was
some,
absolutely a foul on Evan Mobley.
Some sort of weapon.
But no technical foul on Will Hardy last night, to bring this full circle. He never picked up a tee. We were kind of worried that we were going to goad him into picking up a technical, and of course he's smarter than all of us. So.
What a challenge for a coach early in his head coaching career. And I mean that, I don't mean for that to sound as negative, but like, you know, you're in a transition period as a franchise. Your goals are different than, hey, go out there and win as many games as you can. You have to manage that attitude in the locker room, which has got to be weird. You've got a team that plays no defense whatsoever, and you can't let that culture permeate from year to year. So you've got to figure out how to manage that. I mean, it's like a zillion different things. Now, all of a sudden, I've got to yell at the refs more or something. I'm sure he doesn't sleep at night. I'm sure his brain is just spinning with, okay, I used 3.5 units of screaming at that idiot Tony Brothers.
I've got 20 left. I've got to space these out.
I mean, but yeah, I guess you got to set the tone for the team. I mean, all these things that we're not thinking about, like you guys are dissecting how much he's yelling at the refs, and it's because Colin Sexton doesn't use enough units, and Lowry actually gives units to the refs because I think he buys them gift baskets.
Sure. You called a foul on me? I forgive you.
Still love you. Still
Tony love Brothers.
Hey, Bill Kennedy, my guy. I don't know. But I'm glad I'm not him. Because it's hard. I'm sure what he's doing
Will
right
Hardy?
Now. Yes.
Awful.
As a head coach is really hard right now. And it's one of those things where he's not making the roster decisions and that sort of thing. He's just asked to go coach the squad of dudes that's available for him to coach. And that's it's got to be tough right now.
He also has to be the personality of the team, which is really hard because Lowry's pretty personalityless. John Collins is a transplant and pretty personalityless. Colin Sexton is a little bit in his own world, and not in a bad way. These aren't criticisms of any of these people. In fact, I think these are guys you would like to have on good teams at some point, but you also got to have those leaders on the court, and the Jazz don't really have a leader on the court. They don't have that type of player who has that personality, and maybe a Keontae George could develop it at some point, but he's not there yet. No one's listening to the rookie.
Well, they don't care about leaders right now. That's got to be a challenge.
Right. So, but you still have to have one. That's the thing. Whether you care about it or not, it's going to develop naturally, and because none of the players are going to do it, Will Hardy kind of has to do it. So he's got to learn how to be an NBA coach, and he also has to be this voice, vocal leader, culture setter, which is a lot, which actually was some value to what Mike Conley brought last year, maybe even what some of what Kelly Olynyk brought earlier this year. But with neither of those guys on the roster, it's an extra burden on Will Hardy.
I don't know if you can identify with this, Ben, but I can. I won't get into details. But have you ever been set up to fail in your job for the greater good?
I don't think so.
I have.
Okay.
And it sucks.
Okay.
It sucks. And then you remind yourself, well, they told me this is for the greater good.
By design.
This is what was going to happen or whatever. And it doesn't make it, well, first of all, it doesn't make it any fun. Second of all, it makes it that much harder because you're still expected to do a job, whatever that job is. So, I don't know. I feel for everybody on the team in a weird way. But honestly, like, the players should be just taking advantage of every moment that they're out there. But getting drubbed and blown off the floor in the first quarter and basically it's over is rough.
Yeah, when you're down 40-25 after the first, what are you doing? And you know what's going on. Like, they all know.
I mean, these teams are all resting their good players and it doesn't matter. But the truth is they're trying to lose. So how do you manage that as a head coach? Like, oh, well, we're incentivized to lose games, so we got to lose as many. Go out, lose on three. 1, 2, 3, lose. I mean, he's in the silliest position ever. I hate the way that the NBA is set up. Each day that goes by, I dislike this whole draft idea more and more.
I may have gotten to the point where I just say even out all the odds in the lottery. I may be there
give
right
everybody,
now.
Everybody, you know what I was thinking about?
Because then
this.
You might as well be the 14th worst team.
Because who cares?
Because if it's
you
the
might
same
as, well
as the
win.
Yeah, you might as well win. And how was that bad for the NBA at all?
It's not.
And you know what? If you're not good enough to be able to get to the 14th spot, that's a franchise issue.
Well,
spend more money.
I was thinking about this. Think about what it would do for trades. First of all, you'd move a lot of first-round picks because it could be the 28th, but it could be the first.
Well, I would say the entire lottery is even. I wouldn't say all 30.
Oh, I'm going all 30.
I would say all 14.
And then think about this, Ben, like draft night trades where you really need to get into the top five, but you drew dead at number 23. And you've got to figure out how to get higher up in the draft. That would encourage movement. Also, stockpiling draft picks for rebuilds would be super valuable because you'd rather have three ping pong balls in there as opposed to one or zero. I mean, it would make it so fascinating.
If all 30 picks were lottery picks, could be rearranged, then you're right. Picks would fly all over the place.
They'd go everywhere. We'd see movement. Rebuilds would happen in a flash.
If
it would be awesome.
Only 14 picks, the teams that missed the playoffs, are all equal lottery picks. You would basically never see trades with draft picks because everyone would say, well, no, that's a potential number one overall pick. Now, it would only be a whatever 6% chance of getting there. But yeah, more teams would be willing to hold on to their picks.
Listen,
you would see less of trading these superstars, dropping down to being the worst team in the league, winning 15 games a year just to have draft picks.
I love the concept of relegation because you have the carrot and the stick, right? If you can't do relegation.
Which they can't.
Which they're and would never do. So the stick option is out. Get rid of the carrot on the other side. Get rid of the incentive to lose. I mean, this is sports. Why would there ever be an incentive to go out and lose? And I can't believe it hasn't infiltrated other sports more, maybe because draft picks don't matter as much in Major League Baseball. And in football, there are so few games, even though, remember, the Dolphins owner was trying to bribe the coach to go out there and lose. So it is a thing in football.
And there are so few guarantees drafting at the top of the NFL versus what we think are guarantees at the top of the NBA draft, but still.
And the NBA, one player makes a huge, huge difference. So why are we incentivizing the Jazz, and we're just talking Jazz here, and I'm not blaming anybody. This is the NBA's
right,
fault.
This is not the Jazz's fault.
This
is the system. They are playing in the system that is created for them.
Why would you ever incentivize teams to lose? That makes no sense whatsoever. I feel like even if you have to do a draft, I like the idea of just give them a salary cap and go sign these rookies. And if you want to bend over backwards to give a rookie a crazy deal, and just you're going to have a rookie and nobody else on the team, well, then knock yourself out if you think that's the right way to go. I like that, I think, better than this current system because this is silly. And how does it affect the top, the standings? Like that teams get a rest, all these players playing against the Jazz as they come through and they get an automatic win? You shouldn't have an automatic win ever.
Yeah.
Ever. Detroit has been trying to lose for years now. That should never be a thing. And that shouldn't be the idea to a rebuild. Imagine if you could be like, all right, we're going to flip Donovan and Rudy. We're going to get all these first-round picks. So we have four ping pong balls, and we're bound to pop on one of them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And if we don't, we'll trade. Imagine draft day. All right, we've got four first-round picks. Somehow they all came out 16 or worse.
Yeah, right.
But we're going to give all of them to you for three or whatever.
Yeah.
You'd rebuild in a heartbeat.
I'm with you. I don't like the current system. I don't think anyone likes the current system. Certainly see it on my Twitter timeline. Jazz fans don't like the current system. They understand it, but losing's not fun.
It's bad for selling tickets. It's bad for TV product.
It's bad for sustained enjoyability of your franchises. Yeah, it kills the middle class of the NBA, which is where sports are exciting. So, yeah,
I'm going to start a movement, Ben.
I mean, I think it's there. I'm not sure we'll ever actually get to it, but. Yeah, I think evening out the 14 lottery picks, at the very least, would be a very strong move in the right direction. Now, would you start getting teams trying to miss the playoffs so they could get an equal chance of getting a number one overall pick? There are ramifications there.
Exactly. Remove it all. Because to make it the playoffs, which then you're going to have teams at 7 going like, well, we're going nowhere in the playoffs, so we might as well lose. Might as well lose 10 games in a row to drop down past the play-in. I mean, getting into the play-in would totally be a zero incentive. You'd have teams trying to lose like crazy. I don't know, Ben. I don't like it. That feels like a cat to me.
Could be. And I think the other cat you put in to follow it up is, yeah, you just miss a huge chunk of revenue if you don't make the playoffs. The revenue sharing that the NBA does do, you're in a lower tier. That's how you relegate teams. You say, you get less money by a lot. You make the playoffs, that's where the money's made, that's where people are watching the games. The teams that make the playoffs, they get a bigger share of that, a much bigger share.
Well, that's kind of true now, actually.
But go even higher. Make it more punitive.
Well, because most teams break even in the regular season. It's all budgeted for that. That was always the conspiracy theory about Larry Miller, right?
It wasn't a conspiracy. He said it. He said, I don't make money until we make the playoffs.
No, but that he was willing to just be mediocre because he had to have that playoff revenue.
Okay.
Which I don't necessarily buy. I don't think it's fair to accuse Larry Miller of not being all in to win a title. I think that's ludicrous. But that was the thing, right?
Like, yep.
Well, you don't want to be great. You just want to make the playoffs every year so you make that profit. But that, I mean, that's true of pretty much any NBA franchise not named like the Lakers or the Knicks that somehow sell out of that building for a bad product. Didn't the Knicks had a bad loss last night, didn't they?
Did they lose again?
Yeah, your love of the Knicks. I can't wait to see them
fail. Well, it's their 15-2 when OG Anunoby plays, but he can't get right from this elbow injury.
Oh, it's not a bad loss. They lost to the Heat, 109-99. All right.
It's not the Bucks.
Oof, yeah, yikes. To the Wizards?
Yep. That was a toughie.
Well, Doc wasn't the solution there.
Apparently not. Dame's not playing. They're trying to get him right for the playoffs. But
beware the consultant that says, you know what the solution is.
Moi.
You're looking at
myself.
Him. You're looking at him right here. He can step right in tomorrow. Stay tuned. Top three stories of the day at KSLSports.com. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's time to break down the biggest stories of the day.
Let's go.
This is the top three stories of the day on KSLSports.com. On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Want to remind you about the Hercules Hero of the Week. Nominate the youth sports volunteer you know for the Hercules Hero of the Week. Submit your nomination at kslsports.com/contest and listen every Thursday afternoon to JJ and Alex for the winner. Help us celebrate the efforts of those volunteers making an impact with the Hercules Hero of the Week. Sponsored by Hercules Credit Union. All right, time for the top three stories of the day. KSLSports.com. Sarah, where are we starting today?
Number one, the Jazz extend their losing streak to 10.
Yeah, and it's probably going to keep going from there if I had to make a guess. Ben, once again, the Jazz pretty much drummed out of it in the first quarter. The second half was much better than the first half, but to no avail. I mean, the game was never really competitive.
Yeah, the Jazz trimmed it to 50-45. In the third quarter, and then the Cavaliers finished on a 17-2 run, I think. So it was up over 20 again going into the fourth quarter. And, yes, was certainly not a pretty game. Colin Sexton snaps his 20-point game streak at 11. He'd done that 11 times in a row as he continues to play very well. Bryce Sensabaugh, though, I think has been maybe the name of the game for the last two outings for the Utah Jazz. 22 points against Sacramento, 22 points last night. Also added, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 4 assists, something like that. He's just kind of figuring it out. And the big question about Bryce Sensabaugh, if you didn't watch him at Ohio State, was he would bully a bunch of guys in the mid-range and then has a really soft touch, which he still does a little bit in the NBA, but nobody shoots that way. Even last night, he took 5 mid-range shots. He made 2 of them. Well, just basic math, that's bad shooting. Even if you hit 2 really tough shots, if you only go 2 for 5, you've got 4 points on 5 shots, okay? You're below 1 point per possession. That's bad math. But if he can step out and take 9 threes a game and hit 6 of them, all of a sudden the number of ways he sticks in the NBA is pretty interesting. Because worst case scenario, he's George Niang, like a little bit shorter George Niang. By the way, nothing mini about the minivan anymore. Did you see him yesterday?
The guy.
He looks awful.
He played like it.
He has absolutely stopped trying. Good for George Niang. He is milking it in there in the weight room. So, but looking at Bryce, he's pretty intriguing. He's just an intriguing player. His defense is certainly nowhere near as bad as was advertised early in the season. And the other things he does are are fun to watch. And we'll see if he can turn that into an actual NBA career, but there's the makings of it.
Do you want to talk about the actual reason they lost, though?
Sure.
Well, because while Walker was gluing his nose back on, Will Hardy looked down his bench and said, "You, Šamanić, go defend the biggest team in the league."
Yeah.
And I think Omer Yurtseven is a actual success story this year. When he's gotten an opportunity, he's played pretty well. But, I mean, Cleveland is huge.
They are.
And he was totally overmatched. And Cleveland dunked all night. It was another one of those Jazz games where they're just going to dunk on you. Like, why would Darius Garland even shoot? He can just pass it to Jared Allen to dunk.
The scheme that the Jazz were running last night, and I will be fair, I did not ask Will Hardy about it after the game, of why they couldn't figure it out. But seemingly, because it seemed like the Cavs dunked 15 times, right? Like, you would either have Jared Allen or Evan Mobley. And in the first quarter, they combined to shoot 9 of 10 from the floor, I think. They had 23 points combined after one. They would set a screen, and then they would just slip the screen every single time, and there would be no help on the back end to stop them from getting layups or dunks. None at all. And every time the guards in the corners, who I would imagine were either supposed to come down and chip, or somebody was supposed to help, they just, like, they would all point at each other, like, why didn't you stop him? It's like the Jazz had no idea what the plan was, it felt like.
Oh, there was a plan, but you heard me say that one of those monsters just took the face off their biggest player with an elbow, right?
But that was second quarter.
You go stand in front of Evan Mobley.
Well, okay, give me millions of dollars and maybe I'll try.
Šamanić ain't making millions of dollars.
I didn't know if they were trying to trap. I honestly couldn't figure out what they were trying to do.
They were trying to get out of the way. Everybody but Omer Yurtseven was not physically equipped to go stand
but
in front of Evan Mobley.
But there was a lot of people looking at Omer like, Omer, why didn't you do your job there?
You saw Sexton get switched on to Mobley
right, a lot of times.
And like he's giving it his all out there, but Colin is
little.
Very small
compared
to Evan Mobley. So I guess we could say, what's the plan? But I think the plan was, well, we're going to go out there and lose because they're way bigger than us.
And then I will be very curious what we see of Walker Kessler the rest of the season. Will Hardy said he has to get a mask. Does he play? I mean, honestly, the Jazz have so few bodies. Maybe he doesn't. But the Stars got eliminated right last night in the playoffs. So maybe bring old Big Ken Lofton.
You know what? If I'm the Jazz, I totally play him. Because you know what the best part about him getting hurt? That sounds weird. Last night was, even though his nose was laying on the side of the floor, he got back in the play. You see that? He got back into the play. I love that. Showing a little toughness. And I think he may even have a concussion. I was glad they got him off the floor, you know, because it seemed like he was a little wobbly when he was walking. But how about that? Got back in that dang play. Good for him. So, yeah, throw a mask on him. Make him, not make him, have him go out there and play some more.
We'll see. We'll see what the next, 6 games left for the Jazz? 2 home games. We'll see who plays. We're not going to see Lowry. I hope we see Jordan Clarkson one more time. I don't know if we'll see John Collins with back stuff. I'm not sure.
No harm, no foul. All right, what's next?
Number 2, Utah's NIT run is over.
Weird, they lost on the road.
Explain what you mean by that, because I don't know if they lost this game because they forgot how to play offense.
No, the offense was fine. Defense continues to be absolutely abysmal. No, offensively, they were actually pretty brilliant. What did they shoot, 17 of 29 from 3? 34 of 65 overall. Question is, how'd you lose that game? You knocked down 17 threes in a college basketball game in 40 minutes and you lost? What? How? BYU's magic secret was, if they hit double-digit threes, they basically are guaranteed to win. You spotted them 30 points. You'd spotted themselves, what is that, 51 points on threes and lost? What are you doing?
Ben, they had no answer. No answer for Indiana State at all on any possession. Like, there wasn't even the resistance was none. Talk about schemes. I'd love to know what the dang scheme was, because it didn't work at all. Like, I don't know if you want to call it an effort thing. I don't know about that, but they just didn't seem to have an answer. And Indiana State's really good, by the way. They should be in the NCAA.
They should have been in the tournament. But the math really isn't mathing. Indiana State hit 3 more shots 3 total more shots than the Utes in the entire game, and the Utes hit 5 more threes. Like, you got to win that game. Now, where the difference was that Indiana State made 15 free throws, or 14 free throws, and the Utes only made 5. Neither team shot particularly well, but the Utes, who were plagued by poor free throw shooting all year, also just went 5 of 10 last
Well, what do you do when you don't have an answer defensively?
Foul.
That's what you do.
Hack them.
No, it's rough. I mean, Craig is going to have to look at their... I mean, I think their defense let them down more than their offense this year. If you want to look at why Utah, I mean, lost the games that they did, that's why.
But Daewon Smith was brilliant last night. Had maybe his best game of the season. In all honesty, I know he's had some triple-doubles, but he had 28 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, 6 of 6 from the three-point line.
Trying out for another team, man.
Sounds like it. I mean, I would be very worried he would be gone if I was a Utah fan.
Didn't he tweet out something about thanking everybody or something?
Yeah, the Utes tweeted out, hey, thanks to all our loyal fans for following along. And he says, thanks for welcoming me with open arms immediately. It didn't. When I first saw it, my initial thought was, oh, is he saying goodbye already? And then my second thought was, oh, no, he's just saying, I was glad everyone was nice to me when I got here.
Oh, that's a threat is what that is.
But, I mean, I don't expect him back next year. I'd happily be wrong.
That's a threat that, hey, this could be a goodbye.
A guy who has 5 triple-doubles this season and finishes against a good Division I team who probably should have been in the tournament in Indiana State and puts up 26, 7, and 6 on 6 of 6 shooting from the three-point line. Yeah, every team in the country is going to come calling that needs a point guard. So he's going to get a lot of offers, probably going to get a lot of cash. So it's going to be back to the drawing board completely for this Utah basketball team. They're going to just losing a ton, so I'll be curious what they look like next year. I have no idea. Probably bad.
Next.
Number 3, the Bills are trading Stephon Diggs.
Getting a second round pick, but not this year. A second round pick next year. As somebody who's tried to watch the Bills, I told you I sold all my Bills stock in November last year, and I was glad I did. Part of the reason is because I actually don't believe in Stephon Diggs all that much. I know he puts up the numbers. I know a lot of people think he's the reason why Josh Allen's any good. He's also a headache. He also has games where he disappears. He does have some weird drops. I'm not as high on Stephon Diggs as some people are.
I get it that all wide receivers cry about not getting the ball enough. That's just something that comes with the position because you're dependent on somebody else throwing it to you or running a play for you, all these things. And so you're going to cry to everybody who's going to listen about you're always open and you need the ball more. But guys who have a loud enough voice to have that impact the quarterback's decision-making, I think can be a problem. Does that make any sense? Like, they forced it to him so many times because they didn't want him to cry about it in the postgame and
right.
make a
exactly right.
dang scene. And if he's your wide receiver one that you're paying all this dough to, well, eventually the rubber's got to meet the road, and he's either got to be the best receiver in the league and go win you a Super Bowl, or you probably have to part ways. So I'm not really surprised. And to your point, if you think Stephon Diggs is overrated, then that means that you can match most of his production with a rookie, honestly.
Oh, this is a very good wide receiving class. So maybe even at 28, I think is their draft pick,
right.
You might even have somebody drop to you there.
And so you bet on your quarterback instead of the overly vocal receiver.
Seems like a
no-brainer to me, actually. I saw our guy Sam. He was a little surprised by the move. Sam Farnsworth on Twitter. And I kind of wasn't. I kind of thought this was inevitable. You know when I thought this was inevitable was last year. Do you remember the scene he made after losing in the playoffs?
Mm-hmm. But that was constant. He was always making a scene.
No, it was constant.
It was
but
annoying.
Like that was after a playoff game. I mean, that just was, I don't know. There's certain things that... Or red flags, I think.
I like the Texans, though. Fun for the Texans. They've gone out and invested a lot in their roster and putting help around C.J. Stroud. So it'll be fun to watch them next year.
Oh, I don't make a trade for him if I'm the Texans. Yeah, I don't want him anywhere near.
I'm not sure I want that pressure on C.J. Stroud to all of a sudden have to start answering to a wide receiver at this point. Probably good news for our guy Dalton Kincaid, though. He's going to get a lot of looks from Josh Allen this year.
Well, now he doesn't have to force it into Diggs just
Correct.
To shut him up in the locker room.
Right.
Imagine that. That's annoying.
Yep.
All right. It is a Win Ticket Wednesday. We have good tickets this week. Well, we have
good
tickets every week. Yeah, don't get me wrong, because we really do. We're way fortunate in that way. But Tim McGraw at Delta Center coming up on this Friday. So I have a feeling that these are going to be in high demand. So stay tuned. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love, the teams you can't live without.
Get a sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Our 50 segment brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255. Ben, it's Wednesday. That means it's a win ticket Wednesday. Caller 12 right now, 801-575-ZONE. You're going to get a pair of tickets to go see Tim McGraw at Delta Center on April 5th, which would be this Friday. So caller 12, 801-575-ZONE. Isn't he married to somebody famous?
Faith Hill, I believe.
But that's not the one who Biggie Smalls was married to. That's Faith something else.
You're right. Yeah, Tim McGraw is married to Faith Hill as of 1996.
But I'm right about the Biggie thing, right? Faith
Who
something?
Was notorious Big Faith. Her name was Faith Evans.
Faith Evans. There you go. Although Bad Boy Records is somewhat of a touchy subject these days.
Diddy? Things not going well for Diddy?
Apparently things are going really,
really, really south.
Badly for him. What's the latest on that? Is he on the lam or is he still hanging out? What's he doing? There's like rumors he skipped the country to somewhere in the Caribbean, right?
Puff Daddy.
Whereabouts?
Whereabouts. It sounds like he's not on the run. Sounds like that's not the big story when I Google him, so people must know where he is.
Hey, Ben, did you see yesterday that voters of Jackson County rejected public funding for the Royals and Chiefs and renovations of their stadium yesterday? 58% of the voters rejected the plan, and I do not pretend to know the ins and outs and complexities of Jackson County politics, but given how good the Chiefs have been, I was surprised, and it made me think immediately about you pointing out to me a couple of weeks ago what a bad owner the Chiefs had.
Yeah, and I think that might be part of it, that they don't like the ownership.
But now they're kind of loosely threatening to move, which is sad.
Voters have officially chosen not to give a $2 billion handout to the billionaire owners of the Kansas City Chiefs and the Royals. The owners wanted the residents of Jackson, home of Kansas City, to pass a 40-year sales tax to pay for the stadium. Voters rejected it 58-42.
I do not like the concept of the public being arm-twisted into funding stadium projects. I really don't. But, man, that ship sailed a long time ago, it seems. Because especially the NFL, they're going to find somebody that's going to build them. They're going to find a community that's going to build them a stadium.
You find the weak link in the chain, right? Yeah, maybe Salt Lake says no, but Vegas says yes. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, someone's getting it.
Right.
And you're losing it. And it's not like the government's going to say, well, we had that $1 billion in place anyways. We're just going to turn and give it to the schools. Should they? Probably. Are they? They will not. Nobody does that. So, I don't know how you fight that when there's always somebody willing. I mean, it's you know, Amazon had this big issue, right, in New York. Where it's like, yeah, we're not going to give you tax-free. We're not going to make it tax-free for you to operate here. And Amazon said, okay, we'll go up the street and we'll do it wherever we can. Like,
see ya.
And then they get the benefit of the, you know, thousands of jobs that you add. This arm twisting goes well beyond sports billionaires. And that doesn't say it's right. That doesn't make it right. But it is a natural part of our world.
The highest profile. Now, you know, when it comes here locally, I'll tell you this, Ben. BYU, and specifically their football brand, has had this figured out. And, hey, the church as a whole has had this figured out for a long time. I would argue that the church's biggest marketing arm reach is, I would say, two things, Now, people more in the know certainly could argue with me. I'd be willing to listen. But I would say two things. The choir and BYU football.
Okay.
Now, I'm thinking outside of the missionary program and all that sort of thing. I'm just thinking purely in marketing terms. Am I missing anything? Like, I mean, people associate the church with BYU football, and the choir has sung at inaugural.
Sure, right.
Whatever they call superstars the ceremonies.
Superstars come in and sing, like, here.
Well, yeah, right. I mean,
the Muppets came.
I watched them with James Taylor.
Right.
Which was a really cool concert, by the way. But as far as these, like, cities, states, counties, they benefit greatly from these professional franchises. I mean, how much did winning the Super Bowl for the Chiefs actually mean to the city of Kansas City and the state of Missouri as a whole from a pure marketing standpoint? Millions, if not billions, right? I mean, why do universities ultimately love winning college sports? Because their enrollment goes through the roof.
Yep.
I told you, I have a buddy who went to Valpo. He only heard of Valpo because Bryce Drew hit that shot. I mean, it's...
It puts you on the map.
And all of a sudden, you can see these tangible things go up. So, like, of course, if the Chiefs came to Salt Lake and said, hey, we'd love to move here, what do you think that this community would do to land that kind of marketing capability for our community as a whole? We'd do anything for it.
The interesting thing about...
That's not fair, because billionaires can afford it, and you can always make that argument, but it's way more complex than that, unfortunately.
The interesting thing about Kansas City is, what is unique about Kansas City as a city?
Oh, their organized crime history.
I was going to say they're split on state lines, right? So you might be in Missouri one minute and in Kansas the next, and the hard part is legitimately you could stay in Kansas City, move across the street, and be in Kansas and let the state of Kansas benefit from those things and raise the sales tax in Kansas, and they may be willing to do that. I would keep an eye on that. If they feel like Kansas is willing to do it and Missouri is not, they might move to the Kansas side of the
jump
world.
Jump over the river or whatever.
Yeah.
It's only like a quarter of Kansas City is in Kansas.
All you need is a square block.
Yeah, right. I hear you. Well, and the New York teams don't even play in New York. Yeah, no, I got it. Well, it'd be their loss if they lost the Chiefs or the Royals, and the Royals are terrible.
From ESPN, this could mean many things. Speaking of the rejected vote, the Chiefs could try again with a reworked plan more agreeable to voters, change their entire funding approach to include more private investment, or list to offers from competing cities and states, such as Kansas, just across the state line to the west. That would provide the public funding they desire. That's always the issue.
Stay tuned. We've got more coming up next. We've got What You Got Wednesday at 11:30. It's Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Sports coverage in Utah. You're listening to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. I'm sometime this guy, Ben, so I try not to point fingers, but one-up guy, been there, the person
sure.
that just can't help but, you know.
Talk about their experience.
Yeah, right. I took a trip to Hawaii last year.
Oh, I went to Jamaica.
Three times.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Doc Rivers, head coach of the Bucks, he isn't that, but he is throw people under the bus guy.
Absolutely.
Which I also have encountered.
Yeah, absolutely.
I won't tell that story. But I've worked with several people who, you know, you call with a problem. They're like, well, it was this guy and then this guy and then this guy, and you get four people deep and then they're like, yeah, and that's why it didn't happen. It's like, So is everybody but you.
Yeah, right. You're squeaky clean.
Everybody breathing but you. The Bucks are not good on the road, Ben. They're under 500. What are they? Well, let me find their record here. Give me a second. But yeah, the Bucks are below 500, 18-20 on the season on the road. And Doc was asked, you know, why are you not great on the road? And in his response, he threw everybody under the bus, but including like the crew,
the travel crew,
like the locker room managers and the equipment people. It's like, and he even said, he's like, I've been taking notes. I won't tell you what those notes are, but I've been taking notes, like putting everybody on notice. And it's like, dude, you just can't help yourself, can you?
But you know what's funny is Giannis called out the equipment manager as well. Now, he kind of was joking when he said it. At least that's how it was played off. But Giannis said everybody has to do better because they were talking about the early season struggles. And I think this might have been before Doc joined. Maybe Doc was already there. But he says it starts with the equipment manager. He has to wash our clothes better. The bench has to be better. The leaders of the team have to be better. He kind of included everybody. I actually wonder if there is some recognition that, like, hey, this is goofy. This is bizarre what's going on here. Like, and it's not the equipment manager. They don't have that big of an influence. But if you get a sense that, like, you know, to bring back your favorite movie, Moneyball, you have to pay for your own sodas in the locker room. Like, people can tell when things are off kilter or have slipped from where maybe they once were.
Listen, I love Adam Klauke. He's one of my favorite people. And I think everybody around the Jazz players front office saw that. He's the Jazz locker room manager.
What's Adam?
The equipment manager?
Yeah.
Adam's official title. And so I want to tread carefully when I give this next opinion because I think Adam's great. But if you're saying that you're below 500 on the road because they're using like Tide instead of some sort of hypoallergenic fabric softener or something, you know what I mean? Like, look in the mirror, dude. And yeah, probably things aren't perfect with the dang equipment manager, but I think there's of lists of flaws for the Milwaukee Bucks, where would you put poor equipment managing?
50th.
Maybe lower.
Yeah. It's like, well, first it's the defense.
Let's start with the defense.
Yeah.
And let's work our way down.
Yeah.
So I don't, like, why would you publicly throw an equipment manager if you're Giannis or Doc? And I'm not saying that because you say it's kind of a red flag. And here's where I agree with you. Like, Giannis, look in the mirror a little bit, bro.
Yeah.
And the front office needs to look in the mirror because Dame wasn't the right move. And certainly hiring what's-his-bozo before Doc wasn't the right move. And then sacking Bozo to hire Doc wasn't the right move. Like, there's so many things wrong with the Bucks right now that have nothing to do with the poor son of a gun who just got the bus backed over him, who's the equipment manager.
Hiring Adrian Griffin was an enormous mistake.
Which you could have seen a mile away. I think we talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't hire a coach with zero experience whatsoever to coach one of the highest managed, like, needs to be managed teams in the league.
Anytime you make two coaching hires within 6 months of each other, you're in trouble. And that's what they did, because they hired the wrong guy. And then you have no chance but to just try and make an emergency hire. And that's when you end up with a guy like Doc Rivers, who is flawed.
And they,
to say the least.
They basically let Giannis fire the last guy, which is also not a good sign. So the Bucks are a mess, but I feel terrible for their poor equipment manager. And then you say, well, Giannis threw him under the bus too. Maybe this guy's a real dingbat.
Well, a lot of eyes are going to be on Milwaukee. We'll see what happens with Cleveland. I think the Knicks are going to re-sign everybody and try and keep them together. Miami gets a little bit interesting this offseason. There's a lot of teams that are going to be watched closely.
You don't think
Brooklyn in this conversation?
You don't think the Nets are going to start making room for Donovan Mitchell?
They might. I just said, yeah, Brooklyn is an interesting team to watch as well.
Sorry, not the Nets. I meant the Knicks.
The Knicks will probably keep everyone around so they have contracts to sign because they still have a bunch of future draft picks. So they probably keep it together to be enticing for a Donovan Mitchell trade. So Donovan would be happy to go to the Knicks if they had won 15 games, I suspect. But might as well be good if you're going to trade for Donovan, even though I don't think he does what they need. You know, they've got Jalen Brunson, who's...
Yeah, but he's Donovan's the only player in the league that wants to be on James Dolan's team.
Yeah, that is a fact. But I'm looking at teams this offseason that might, with the right amount of chaos mixed into the postseason, might become sellers or become desperate, where if you're a Jazz fan, you start circling some of those teams and saying, hey, who wants to make a bad trade? Because that's what Danny Ainge loves. Blood on the ground, buy property. Danny Ainge is the king of that. Wait until somebody else is in real trouble and then swoop on in like a snake and just say, oh, interesting. You need help? Let Uncle Danny
desperate
fix
teams.
Things for you.
Desperate teams make bad moves.
I've got draft picks.
Absolutely is true since the beginning of the NBA.
So you are rooting for that if you're a Jazz fan. And, you know, you might – we'll see what happens in the West. I have no idea what's going to happen in the West. Denver's the number one seed right now. Minnesota and the Oklahoma City Thunder are both tied for two. Now, they're all equal in the loss column, which is what matters. They're just a win back. They haven't played. And as good as they are, they probably both expect to win their next games, though Oklahoma City is in Boston tonight, so they might fall a full game back. But Clippers potentially going to run into some chaos this offseason. Minnesota could definitely run into some chaos this offseason with their weird ownership stuff going on. Dallas appears to have figured it out, but they've figured it out until they haven't. And
well, figured it like you really are considering Dallas for a title. I like their moves at the deadline too. It made them a better team. Totally agree. But I
think if they make the conference finals, Denver. That's enough. That's enough to keep Luka engaged and happy that these young pieces that they have are good enough to compete for something with some more development. So he doesn't ask out this summer, which is all you're trying to do. Keep Luka in a Dallas uniform as long as possible. Suns are a disaster, I suspect. I know they're 6-4 in their last 10, which is actually better than they have been playing, but still a disaster.
But can they? They can't do anything, though. I mean, they're not going
to
trade.
No, I mean, they could sell Devin Booker at some point, but they won't do that this summer.
No, he's their young franchise player. Why would they do that?
Because they have no wiggle room otherwise. They just might not have a choice.
Yeah, and they're going to run it back. Yeah, that's what happens when you trade for Bradley Beal.
Right. Because you can't trade Bradley Beal, and I don't think Kevin Durant's bringing you back 3 first-round draft picks anymore.
Nope.
As good as he is, he clearly is not good enough to get you to the top of a conference. So why would you mortgage everything you have for him?
He's 200 years old.
Yep.
Well, he's not the top player on a title contending team anymore.
Yeah, he may never have been.
Oh, I think he was at one point. But you know what? This is what him going to join the Warriors does to the conversation.
Absolutely.
This was his mistake because now everybody looks at his legacy and says, well, maybe you really weren't.
He has 2 titles on a team that was already winning titles before him.
Yep.
That won 73 games the previous season, right?
Yep.
Yeah, you signed with that team and you win a title, everyone says, like, yeah, okay.
Of course you did, yeah.
They would have won without you, and they probably would have. So, yeah, that's on Kevin. Well, now, he has his titles. He's going to the Hall of Fame. He's one of the 10 greatest scorers of all time. I think he's maybe the most overrated basketball player of all time, in my opinion, but... Yeah, he's super talented.
He signed up for that, though.
Yeah, he absolutely did. He put himself in line with that.
I think he was that good at one point. I think saying that he wasn't is selling him short. But again, that's not my fault he didn't stay in Oklahoma City.
Or wherever.
Yeah.
But he didn't lead OKC to a title, got him to a finals, was a toe on the line away from maybe getting the Brooklyn Nets a championship, but they lose to Milwaukee, and Milwaukee beats the Suns in the finals. So maybe he was really close, but sports is full of guys who were really close that don't become GOATs because close is not the finish line.
No, it is not.
So anyways, that's what you're looking for, though, if you're a Jazz fan to, you know, talk about this Milwaukee Bucks team. You know, that's what the Jazz want. The Jazz want Milwaukee to be a catastrophe, people to get desperate, Giannis to get angry and say, I want out. And the Jazz to say, oh, interesting. I've got a landing spot. You only have to face him twice a year. Giannis isn't going to be, you know, you're not sending him to the Lakers. Send him to Salt Lake. The way the Jazz sent Donovan Mitchell to Cleveland. Like, yeah, I'm sure he wants to go to New York. I'm sure Giannis would love to go play for the Miami Heat. Salt Lake's frigid at times. Just send him to Utah. We'd love to take him. And that is the plan. That's part of the plan for the Jazz. So,
but you can't just make that happen, which is something that we've talked about a lot.
Which is, again, why if you're a Jazz fan watching the playoffs, you just hope it's catastrophe after catastrophe. You hope the favored teams lose. You hope the expensive teams lose. That's what you want. You want the ruling class of the NBA to suffer. You want Boston to lose. I don't know if they're going to, but that's what you're rooting for.
Did you see Wemby's line last night?
I did.
With his
near quadruple double.
I saw a straw poll for MVP. That would be Jokic is pretty much running away with it. I think the second best player in the league is Joel Embiid. If you look at the final four, you've got at least two teams that run their offense through playmaking centers. I think if I'm the Jazz and I'm identifying the next star, I might be looking for a playmaking center. Everybody wants a guard that dribbles the whole game. I think your next look at our guy Şengün.
It's where in Houston. Houston gets fascinating.
I think the best teams in the league. I think you might have to have a playmaking 7-footer going forward. I don't think it's the 6 whatever guard that dribbles. I think it might be running your offense Anthony Mason style through a big. I think that might be the next evolution of basketball.
Houston's really interesting because they were so-so, pretty bad. Alperen Şengün gets hurt. They take off. Jalen Green scores all these points, and now there's this thought there, well, they play so slow with Alperen Şengün that when they can play fast with Amen Thompson and Jalen Green, who's having this huge breakout right now, and all these guys can get out and run, that's their style of play. And Şengün actually just gets in the way of that. And if I were the Utah Jazz, I would say, oh, interesting, you don't like Şengün so much. How much can I give you for him? Because right I'm with you. The league, my theory right now in the NBA is that the skills have all caught up. There were all these super skilled guys, these triple-double guys that were kind of dominating the league, these super dominant kind of 3-4 wings, the Jason Tatums, the LeBron Jameses, et cetera, of the world, that were so popular and they had good size. And now the league has gotten really big again. Where the best players in the league are Jokic.
Super skilled bigs.
Are Embiid. You could put Giannis into that conversation. I know he plays a little bit more like a wing, but he's 7 feet tall, super skilled, averages like 6-7 assists a game. Now Wemby's coming. Chet is coming. I'm with you.
Where you run your offense through these bigs. You know what playing fast is, Ben? Honestly, you know what playing fast is? It's a gimmick. And it's designed to manufacture stats and scores, and it's designed to cover up bad defense. And eventually it doesn't work.
How many teams play fast in the playoffs?
Nobody.
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 You can't.
Because the other team's trying. Nobody. The other team never likes to run back on transition defense. That's true across the board. So in the regular season, you dog it in transition. But in the playoffs, they don't do that anymore. The Phoenix Suns under Mike D'Antoni never got over the hump because playing fast is a gimmick. Playing through a playmaking center, however, is something that I think you can really build a franchise on. You're right. I think maybe we're seeing a different evolution, that the skills of the big have caught up with the skills of the wing. And now I'd rather have an unselfish center who's a great passer, scorer, et cetera, to run my team through, as opposed to somebody who's going to dribble the ball on the perimeter the whole game. I don't know. Just a thought.
No,
I mean, like,
size has always been the premium in the NBA. The league had this weird change where shooting caught up so quickly that we weren't valuing size anymore, and then the size learned to shoot.
It's still basketball.
And then size learned to shoot. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, now you have size and shooting. Now, it's the inchworm in Sesame Street, right? That the front goes forward, and then the back pulls up.
But
the back is the shooting and the skill. The front of the head of this worm is size. And it goes forward, and the rest has to find a way to catch up and overtake it. And then the head shoots forward again, and that's the size of the NBA. The bigs always find these major skills. They steal the guard skills, and they stay ahead of the pack.
But it's not just the shooting. I want to emphasize what you said. It's the shooting and the skill, because I don't want any part of Karl Anthony Towns, who can shoot and score, and terrific for him. That he is not even in the same stratosphere as Jokic, because Jokic can do it all. He's
right.
Like, you need not somebody that's just going to score 30 points.
Right.
Talking about somebody you can run your whole system through.
Absolutely.
You come down, you get them the ball at the nail or whatever,
yep.
And then they go to work. I mean, that's what Jokic makes a living doing. You think, oh, that guy can shoot. That is a fraction of his game.
Correct. Oh, yeah, it's not his game. It might be the worst thing of his offensive game.
100%. It's good enough to keep the other team honest.
And it makes highlights.
But really what he's doing is much more.
And he takes maybe 2 threes a game at most.
Right.
Maybe.
He makes Jamal Murray's life so much easier.
Yeah.
And Aaron Gordon's actually a functional offensive player because of Jokic. You know, it's that, I think, is the future. The skilled big. And I think you're right about skills catching up to size. And it'll be interesting to see what comes next. But those are the best players in the league right now. Yeah, if Houston fools itself into thinking that Şengün was the problem, well, yeah, you take advantage of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. See, make Fertitta, Tillman Fertitta, their owner, feel like now's the chance to win. You can go get a bunch for Alper and Şengün. Get a guy who can help you win now and steal him from them.
Hey, Tillman, you're right. Jalen Green's the guy.
He's him. He's
the dude. Man, have you seen that guy? That Şengün was holding him back. It's like the crooked music manager that approaches the lead singer, you know, aside from the rest of the band, and says, "Hey, this band's really about you. You should."
You're the star.
You know, you're the guy. You're the star. You're the one everybody's coming to see. You know, Jalen Green's the guy. Special.
Put everything in him.
Special. I would offer to trade for that guy, but I know you just say no to anything I would offer. So how about that Şengün dude? He was like playing in mud out there. I mean, he was obviously your problem. We'll take him off your hands. It's all right.
I would. That's the player I would look at. If I were anybody in the NBA, I would try and pry him out of Houston, if possible.
And if anybody's that dumb, it might be the Rockets.
I'd go for it.
Stay tuned. We'll have What You Got Wednesday coming up next. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Whether it's the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, or Aggies, these guys have got you covered.
Time to eat, fellas.
You're locked on to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
1, 2, 3,
on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Time for a little What You Got Wednesday. We do it every Wednesday. If you're new to the show, Ben and I both do a 5-selection draft of one sports topic, one not sports topic, and then we put it out for a vote. And I dominated last week.
Did you?
Because I had a bad week the week before, so it's good. I had a good rebound. Best Tobacco Road college basketball players.
You got Michael Jordan 1.
61-39. And best friendship duos in movies, 69-31.
Okay.
Sorry, buddy. I feel like we got criticized because we missed a lot in the friendship duo department. So you get the first pick of both drafts today. Congratulations.
Okay. I was ill prepared for this.
Today's sports related draft, Sarah, is?
We're doing best all time NBA rookies.
So,
like their rookie season.
Their rookie seasons, yeah.
Best rookie seasons of all time. Oh, man. How do we want to break this down? Do we want to lay out the stats? What are we talking about here?
Whatever criteria you want.
Okay. Do you think there's an obvious number one? My go-to question.
Statistically, there probably is, but I'm not sure what you're considering.
Okay, I'm going to go with maybe the most iconic number one or rookie season of all time, and I'm going to go with Magic Johnson.
Yeah, he won the title.
He wins the title. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is hurt game 6 in Boston, right? And Magic steps in and plays center, and
I think it was in Philadelphia.
Is that Philly?
I'm pretty sure.
Has 42 and 15 on the road and hits the game winner. So, yeah. Finals MVP his first year, Magic Johnson.
So, I'm going to go with Wilt Chamberlain because he did have the statistically best rookie season ever. 37.6 points, 27 rebounds, and he won the MVP and the Rookie of the Year award, which I don't think has been duplicated. But that would be the I get the Magic Johnson pick because, like, as far as iconic rookie seasons go, that's probably it. But
that's
I'll go with Will.
Give me these are hard. There's not that many iconic rookie seasons. We're just doing the NBA, right? We're not doing
yeah, just the NBA.
All right, I'm gonna go with Michael Jordan. He wins Rookie of the Year over Hakeem Olajuwon. He averages 28 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. Like, immediately steps in and was the best player from the draft class right away. And everyone was like, oh, man, this guy's different. And at some point is going to take over and be the best player in the world. And he did.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that'll get you some votes for sure. I'm going to go with Larry Legend, Larry Bird. He lost in the conference finals his rookie year to the Sixers. So,
oh, okay. So
Magic
that's where it
did
was.
Beat the Sixers in the finals. But Larry Bird did win Rookie of the Year over Magic that year. Had a great statistical season, averaged a double-double, 21 points and 10.4 rebounds, 4.5 assists per game. And, of course, you know, the opening chapter, as you mentioned, to the Bird Magic saga. So I'm going with Larry Legend.
Man, you know what? I'll go a little bit more recent because everyone knew he should have been the pick and they blew it. Give me Luka Doncic. Give me Big Luka. He steps in right away. What did he go, fourth? The Hawks traded him on.
Yeah, for Trae Young.
And obviously got drafted behind both DeAndre Ayton and what's his name now in Sacramento, who's now on his third team in the NBA. That's how bad he is. It just
Marvin Bagley?
Bagley. Give me Luka Doncic. Rookie year. Let me see what Luka even
did
averaged.
You see that Vlade Dadi was in attendance at a game the other day and Luka was trash-talking him for not drafting him?
Luka averaged 21, 8, and 6 his rookie season, but did it on very good efficiency. Like, was a good player right away.
All right. And we'll put the years on here, by the way, when we list it online or whatever. Ben, I'm going to go with Shaq.
Yeah.
In 92, 93, and, you know, statistically it was great, 23 and 14, 3.5 blocks per game. But Shaq instantly changed the league. The day he got into the league, he changed it, and all of a sudden there was this big, powerful center that moved and was unstoppable. Changed the way fouls were called. I mean, changed the league day one, not to mention the most marketable player since Michael Jordan, for sure. But remember he's making movies and Kazam and all this stuff. I mean, Shaq was just dominating. Remember his logo of him with the two-handed power dunk? I mean, that...
On the shoes.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess I don't need to justify, but I'm going to go with Shaq.
I'm going to go with a guy, this kind of doesn't count, but it does count because it was his first season in the NBA, David Robinson. David Robinson gets drafted in 87, comes in 1989-90, makes all NBA, makes all defensive team, makes the all-star team, wins rookie of the year. His rookie season averaged 24 points and 12 rebounds and 4 blocks a game. Like, immediately stepped in to a prime era of big men in the NBA and was as good as anybody. So, David Robinson. Was that my fourth pick? Okay.
So David Robinson. So, this is four for me. I'm going to go with Lou Alcindor.
Okay.
For the Bucks in 69-70. 28.8 points per game, 14.5 rebounds. Dominant.
And then I'm just going to follow it up with the other Twin Tower in San Antonio. And give me Tim Duncan's rookie season. Number one overall pick. Steps in. 21 points, 12 rebounds, 2.5 blocks, all NBA first team, all defensive second team, rookie of the year, all-star, finished top five in defensive player of the year. Tim Duncan was bananas as soon as he got into the NBA, and then they won a title his second year. All-star's first season, though, incredible player.
I should probably go someone more modern, but for my final pick, I'm going to go Oscar Robertson, the Cincinnati Royals, 60-61. 30 points, 10 rebounds, 9.7 assists. Almost a triple-double back when triple-doubles actually meant something.
We probably whiffed on LeBron.
I thought about LeBron, but LeBron statistically was...
I mean, he was like 25-5 his first year. They did not make the playoffs, which is the only thing I would hold against him.
Oscar Robertson was my last one.
That was the issue. He did not make the playoffs his first year in the NBA.
They were so bad, though. Yeah. It's hard to hold. Hold that against LeBron, but yeah, LeBron could have been the other one.
But, I mean, again, look at who we drafted. You know, it's not like we had a list of bad players on the roster.
LeBron did not average 25 points per game.
I said 25-5. 20 points, 5 rebounds.
I see. Okay, that's it. Right. Sorry, I was confused. I was like, I thought that sounded high. He jumped to 27 points per game in his second year. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Sarah, do you want to recap?
I think my list is too old.
You got a lot of oldsters.
Yes, I don't have the years for everyone,
yeah,
but
we can get them.
Jake, you have 1, Wilt Chamberlain, 2, Larry Bird, 3, Shaq, 4, Kareem, 5, Oscar Robertson.
Robertson.
And Ben, you have 1, Magic Johnson, 2, Michael Jordan, 3, Luka Doncic, 4, David Robinson.
Yep.
And then 5, Tim Duncan.
Yeah. Mine's certainly more modern.
Very much so. All right, we'll see. We'll see. Maybe there's some throwback people out there online that want to vote for me. I doubt it. All right.
So for our non-sports draft, we are doing top 5 best animals in movies. Take that however you want. Animated, non-animated, best animals.
Okay, I'm going to take a number 1 overall pick. If you guys want to veto it, you can. Okay? Give me, I'm giving you guys full right. Again, let me ask a question. Is there an obvious number 1 pick?
No.
If I take the T-Rex from Jurassic Park, does that count?
Fine with me. It's an animal.
Sarah, you're okay with the T-Rex in Jurassic Park?
Yeah. That's kind of random.
I think the
but...
best animal character of my lifetime. It was iconic when it came out. Still is the main character, even though I know they have like actual humans. But give me the T-Rex in Jurassic Park.
I'm going with my favorite, Snoopy.
Okay. That's fine. That works.
Charles Schulz was a brilliant man.
Yeah, he was. And I'm with you. In on Snoopy. I'm going to go with... This is tough. This is a hard one. There's a lot to pick from, and I'm not sure how many... I don't like movies with animals. Is an issue. Give me Babe, the pig that lives in the city.
Pig in the City, I believe, was the sequel.
It was the sequel. Same stupid pig.
All right. I'm going to go with Mickey the Mouse.
Okay. A character.
Animal in movie.
Sure, you're right. You're not wrong. Oh, okay, I'll take this one. Give me the shark in Jaws, which is exactly the T-Rex in Jurassic Park. It's the same character.
Same director, even.
Same director. Same idea. He just repackaged it with some science fiction.
And some new CGI, some new tech.
Yeah, but give me the shark in Jaws.
I'm going to go with Bugs Bunny.
You're just going all cartoon characters.
Beloved cartoon characters.
Sure.
That are animals.
You're not wrong. I almost picked a mean one. I'm not gonna pick it. Not the Jaws
mean
is
to me?
The hero. No, it would have been just horribly, horribly insensitive. So I'm not gonna do that one. Give me.
Ben's really struggling.
This is hard.
There's so many though. Just take your pick.
Give me Beethoven.
The dog?
The dog. Beethoven.
God, that was a bad movie.
Yeah, I don't like those movies at all.
All right. Oh, I know what I'm going to pick last because you're never going to pick it. So I will not go that way. Let's see here. I feel like there are so many good Disney and Warner Brothers animals to go with. I'm going to go with Goofy the dog.
You're just going all cartoon characters. You're going all cartoon characters.
Again, beloved cartoon characters. Nobody cares about Beethoven the dog. Everybody loves Goofy.
Yeah, you're right. I like Goofy. I have so many that would never get me votes, so I'm not going to pick them. Is this my 5th? All right, give me King Kong. The best gorilla there is.
Somewhere Magilla Gorilla is pretty upset about that tank. Oh, man, I didn't even think about the Hanna-Barbera universe. What am I doing?
Yeah, there's a whole lot out
there. Oh, because I've got to take my last pick because it's the most amazing animal character of all time. But I left Yogi Bear on the board.
Yeah, there's a lot.
My final one, I'm going to go with Mr. Ed.
That idiot?
the whole time talking horse? Wilbur, that guy? Incredible.
Sarah, do you feel like there's... What would you have picked, Sarah? You were mad at me for taking Beethoven, the St. Bernard.
I don't know. I just feel like... I feel like I resonate more with Jake's in this situation than with yours. That's
sure,
all.
You guys went cartoon characters.
Yeah, I was... But, like, what's his name? Air Bud? You could have gone. I would have taken him over Beethoven.
Different. That's a different era. Most of our listeners are not your age, so I'm catering to people my age. Got a text from Steve. Lassie, a classic.
Yes, Lassie.
Bambi, a classic. Anaconda from the movie Anaconda. A good one there. You know what I should have taken? I actually love this character because the meaning behind this character and what the character represents is great. Was it the crocodile in Peter Pan?
Oh, yeah. Isn't his name... Doesn't he have a name? Well, is it like TikTok or something?
8 o'clock, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
The croc who eats Captain Hook. Because the crocodile represents time, which is why he ticks and talks when he comes by. And they go to Neverland because they never want to grow up. But the bad guy is a clock ticking, which is about life. Very good writing. Anyhow.
Who was your favorite chipmunk?
Nemo.
Nemo.
Nemo's on the list. Sea Biscuit.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Never seen it.
Love Sea Biscuit.
Not a horse guy.
Secretariat.
Yeah, Secretariat. Those are like real animals.
Secretariat, they both are. I'm sure they made a movie about Secretariat.
Hooch from Turner and Hooch.
The dog from, what's it called, Sandlot?
Yeah, that's a good one. What's it, Hercules?
Hercules.
Yeah.
Scooby-Dooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo.
All right.
Tom and Jerry.
Garfield?
Garfield.
I like Garfield.
There's so many.
Not a good Garfield movie.
Quick recap.
I like the rat from Ratatouille.
Jake, you have 1 Snoopy, 2 Mickey Mouse, 3 Bugs Bunny, 4 Goofy the dog, and then 5 Mr. Ed the horse. Ben, you have 1 the T-Rex from Jurassic Park.
Yep.
2 Babe the pig. 3 the shark from Jaws.
Yeah.
4 Beethoven the dog, and then 5 King Kong.
Ah, okay. We went totally different approaches there. I'll be curious to see where our... I think you're going to win. I'll be curious which way our listenership goes.
What is this? Somebody says, someone for the love of God, please take Godzilla or King Kong.
I got King Kong.
Ben got you there. Colton said, Ben lost when he picked Babe with the second pick. Yeah, I got to
say. People like Babe.
No, they don't.
The spider, Charlotte from
Charlotte's Web.
That's a good one.
Mr. Ed should have gone 1. Legend.
It's the classic movie about the dog that dies.
Benji?
No. Oh, my gosh.
Marley and Me?
Yes.
It's not a classic movie.
That isn't a classic movie, no.
It's a terrible movie. I hate animals. I hate animal movies. That's why I went with these bad creatures.
What? Old Yeller? Isn't that the original dog dying movie?
Yeah. Yeah. They shoot the dog. Anyways.
Rough.
Yeah, that was I cried. I remember seeing that movie. That was like the movie when I was young that were like, you don't want to see it. It's going to make you cry.
Oh, man. I've had a rough morning. All right. We'll wrap up the show. Coming up next, stay tuned. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love. The teams you can't live without.
You have sense of urgency.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. Want to remind you about Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology. And doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255, Peach Doors and Windows.
You know what?
That was a big sigh.
I didn't get to take the picks I wanted to take because they wouldn't have won me the vote, is the problem. So I didn't actually pick with my heart. I picked with my brain.
The animals won or the rookie seasons won?
The animals won.
What would your heart have picked?
I like the cat in the movie Alien. She's kind of running around on board. Give me the cat from Alien. Give me Black Phillip from the movie The Witch. He's the devil. But it's a good character. Scary. Just a couple off the top of my head.
The pug from Men in Black?
Okay. That is a dog in a movie. You are correct. All three animals from Homeward Bound, Sassy and Shadow and Chance. Like those three.
Wasn't Jack Palance Chance?
Yeah. Michael J. Fox. And was it Sally Field?
I think it was Roseanne.
Was it Roseanne?
A niche one, but the dogs from Swiss Family Robinson, Duke and Turk.
Okay. I don't know if I've ever seen Swiss Family Robinson.
I always wanted to live in a...
Treehouse.
Treehouse because of that movie.
Free Willy from Free Willy.
Oh, yeah. The dolphin.
The whale.
The whale.
I know, but then there's the dolphin Flipper. With one fin, you know, or like a missing fin.
Oh, Donna Meach was Shadow. Sally Field was Sassy.
Yeah, I was going to say Roseanne was a little too screechy. Yeah. Roseanne was in Look Who's Talking.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Ben, real quick on our way out the door, can I have you rate the burn? All right? Because we brought this up when Jim Harbaugh was still throwing shade at Ryan Day. So who had the better burn, Jim Harbaugh or Ryan Day? All right? So Jim Harbaugh, as a reminder to you, was talking about reused an old burn he'd used on Ryan Day, said, quote, "Everybody in that building, no one was born on third base. Everyone had to work their way to first," unquote. Talking about how Ryan Day just inherited Urban Meyer's team. Mm-hmm. So Ryan Day has responded, Ben, talking about his new running backs coach, Carlos Lachlan. He said, quote, "Like some of us in this profession, he came up not in a football family, but grew up and kind of had to figure it out on his own," unquote.
0% burn? That's not a burn. If that's what Ryan Day thinks is a burn, fire him now.
Well, he's saying that Jim Harbaugh is part of a football family. He didn't earn. He's a Nepo baby, is apparently what he's saying.
Well, he's right.
Yeah. So which is the better burn?
Yeah, I should have actually found a way to burn him. He said something altruistic. Should have been more cruel. For it to be a burn, I need more cruelness. Ryan Day, out. Bum. Can't do it.
So you're going with the Harbaugh?
Yeah, I'm going with Harbaugh still.
But what Ryan Day is saying is essentially Harbaugh was born on third base.
Which he was. We all agree. But then find a way to hit him harder than the new running backs coach. My goodness.
Well, no, he's using the running backs coach as a vehicle. Ben, pay attention.
I am. It's not a good burn. It's too slow to get there. It's not on the nose enough.
Sounds like a take from somebody who likes some satanic cat.
Ryan Day does not have a title, right? He's not won a championship at Ohio State?
No.
Well, hard for him to talk then. Harbaugh did it.
Oh, you can still throw out a good burn even if
you... Yeah, I would think so. That wasn't one. That's why I'm rating the burn a 0 out of 10. No burn.
No, don't.
Now,
we're
I will
done.
Tell you what my All favorite right. burn is.
Vance, it's Scotty or next.
Can I tell you what my favorite burn is?
97.5 the KSL
I'm
Sports
I'm going to rank this 10 out of 10.
He's burning me. Hold on to this. I know this is something I